I'll see you.
Fozzie, I don't have my hot board going yet for baseball coaches. That's a tough search, man, because there's no – look, I know that the names that are going to get thrown out there if there is a coaching search. Like Dan Hoefner is not leaving DBU to go to Texas. Dan Hoefner's too, from my understanding, is from a religious standpoint, like was a little too extreme for Baylor. So I don't think Texas is a place for Dan Hoefner. Yeah, that's just what I've heard.
You want to draw lines? You want to win ball games?
No, I'm saying I don't think Hoefner would come to Texas.
No, for sure. But by the way, just listen to this real quick. This is from, I guess, friend of the show. I know he was, we cross-talked with him at some point, but it's from Nash Talks Texas on Twitter.
Yeah.
From last night. Texas was a single hit batter away from being the NCAA D1 record, as well as being one hit batter away for the most hit by pitch in a single game, both teams combined. And the record for hit by pitch in an inning is 7. The record for hit by pitch in a game is 10. And the record for hit by pitch in a game, both teams, is 14. So Texas was, they had
nine
hit batters, and then they're one away from tying for single teams both combined. So,
Jordan, threw, as a staff, Texas threw 253 pitches last night.
Were any of them at least like close to the dome or something where it's like, okay, now I'm kind of scared getting back in the box, or was it just like straight to the hip? Because you know damn well I didn't watch.
10 pitchers. They used 10 pitchers in a midweek game against UTRGV. Guys just can't hit the strike zone. And like of all the guys we saw last night, the guy I feel worse for is Dre Duplantier, because he had been pitching so well and then gives up the home run against Houston in the Sunday game. And then it's like, he just imploded last night.
Yeah. So Jeff, I'm not sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
And I'm not sure how comfortable you are with potentially maybe speaking on this, 'cause I know you do have a relationship there, but like, I was hanging out with a friend of the show, Nick Harris, last night.
Mm-hmm.
And he follows Texas baseball pretty closely. You know, Guy Frazier, him and Guy.
Name drop Guy. Nick Harris and Guy Frazier, they're Texas baseball loyalists to the core.
Yeah. So
baseball.
So I was hanging out with Nick, and he just kept giving me updates on the game. And what was the final? Because like whoever said in the comments, I remember it was like 13-1 or 15-1.
17-9.
Okay. So once it got to, I think it was 9-1 or 10-1 or something like that. That's when I first found out about it, when he first brought it up. He was like, so is Pierce going to get fired? And I was like, you're asking, like, you couldn't ask the wrong, a more wrong guy. But he was like, well, like, there's no way he doesn't, right? And I was like, I don't know. I guess I'll ask Jeff tomorrow. So, like, what do you think based off where things are? Obviously, for me, as soon as he told me it was 10-1, guess where I ran to? The live updates thread on our board, baby.
it was the you probably expected it to be, right?
Yeah, just because, like, I mean, our board is I love it that it's this way, but our board is pretty G-rated compared to a lot of other boards, right? Yeah. But it was still funny seeing all the meltdowns. Like, I live for that type of stuff. Like, whenever like Miami did that dumbass shit with kneeling the ball, the first thing I ran to was the Miami 24/7. Yeah. So like, I'm on our board just thinking, like, hope we're not a message board geniuses, but I even see Jeff just kind of not going outside your lane, but just like, this is really, really bad.
It's embarrassing, man. Embarrassing. I called it what it is, man. It's one of the worst nights in the history of this baseball program. Like, the great storied history of the University of Texas baseball. Been to the College World Series more than anybody. You've got the national championships on the wall. You look at the retired numbers, and it's some of the greatest players that ever play in college baseball. David Pierce will tell you, man, he's only the fifth head coach that this program's had. You can talk about full-time head coaches. It's only the fifth full-time head coaches program's had in the last 100 years. Man, the bar for excellence is pretty freaking high. And that right there, look, man, did Coach Gus have some bad years? Yeah, he had a couple. Did Augie have some bad years? Certainly. I don't know. They might finish with a winning record, but stuff like that, it's not all that different, Jordan, than like Tom Herman's last season with football. Like if you look at it on the surface, you'd say, hey, you know, in a 10-game season, you know, you finished 7-3, you won a bowl game, you finished in the top 25. You know, that's pretty good by most standards, but you got to look beneath the surface. And when you look beneath the surface at where Texas is right now, I've said this about David Pierce for a long time. His philosophy on recruiting pitchers is they wanted to recruit, you know, throwers or guys that had stuff and basically teach them how to pitch, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But you better be damn good at player development. But for every, you know, you have to give them credit for Bryce Elder and Pete Hansen and, you know, even last year, LeBaron Johnson, guys that they've kind of found. You know, Bryce Elder was a late ad. You know, they've found some guys that have been really good. You know, they rejuvenated Cole Quintanilla. They've done some really good things, what they got out of Tristan Stevens. But then there's a whole list of guys that came to Texas with good stuff that either transferred out or never put it together. And I think that's why you've seen the pitching situation be just kind of wonky like it is. You know, the unfortunate thing for them, you talk about missed opportunities, and I'm just talking about the David Pierce tenure as a whole. You talk about missed opportunities, man. That 2021 team,
sorry to cut you off, but like you want to talk about missed opportunities, like didn't their season end last year because the dude lost the ball in the light?
Yeah, and you can't there.
And like, yeah. I know that's kind of a weird thing, but it's like, yeah, you know, and then, that's what I think of.
I saw some of the casuals like, you know, blowing up Dylan Campbell. After, dude, Texas isn't even in. They might not even be in the NCAA tournament last year if it's not for Dylan Campbell. So I'll tell you where you can shove that opinion if you really faulted Dylan Campbell for that and blamed him for the whole thing. But man, I think about missed opportunities, Jordan. I just think about that 2021 team, and that team's only fault was they couldn't beat Mississippi State. They did it the one time with the rain delay game, the weather delay game, when Ivan Melendez hit the big home run, and then lost on a walk-off in a semifinal game. And, you know, Mississippi State ends up winning the national championship. That was that team's only fault was they were good enough to go win it all. CB mentions 2020. I mean, the 2020 team was basically a couple positional pieces. Like you take out Melendez, you take out Mike Antico, which that's two really huge freaking pieces. But you have Bryce Elder on that team. Like your rotation, when the COVID shutdown happened, your weekend rotation was about to be Bryce Elder, Ty Madden, and Pete Hansen. Good luck beating that team in a weekend series, a regional or a super regional with that pitching staff.
For sure. Before we get away from baseball, I want to ask you about this. Why or how did this happen? Because if I'm not mistaken, at some point this college baseball season, there's someone who reports in College Athletics that I think came out. Not that it was necessarily kind of like one of those like exposing articles, but it was just a story about how apparently LSU has the highest, I don't want to say payroll, but they have more money in NIL attributed to to baseball. I almost said men's baseball than any other school in America. So how did they end up being so bad? Because again, I'm such a casual baseball fan. I'm not even a baseball fan.
I don't know if it's there as bad as you look at last year. You lose two of the top picks in the draft. You lose Dylan Cruz and, you know, Paul Skeens. Shoot, I don't know what Paul Skeens got paid at LSU, but I know people at Texas were dropping me pretty significant hits about what the NIL figure was going to be to sign Paul Skeens, and it was in the neighborhood of what you talk about, like a big-time football transfer. That's what it takes when you can get the number one pick in the major league draft in the portal. That's the kind of money you're going to pay for a frontline pitcher.
Wait, is it over 400?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm very curious.
That's what I was told. That's what I was led to believe. It might not have been that, but that's what I was led to believe.
The baseball NIL market, what that looks like. And like another thing that LSU
too, they've got the Marucci relationship, which I think the Marucci factory is in Baton Rouge. I think the guy who owns it's an LSU alum. So I'm a little out of my depth on that relationship. But yeah, baseball money for LSU is no problem. They can pay. And you look at what they paid Paul Skeens, what they paid Tommy Tanks to come over from NC State. I mean, yeah, that team is kind of what you envision in the portal era being a national championship team. You recruit, you inherit a good team, and credit Jay Johnson. He got some transfers coming over from Arizona, some leftover pieces from Paul Maneri, and then you add some pieces from the portal. That's kind of in the portal era. You hire what you feel is the best coach available, get some transfers, get some portal guys. In the portal era, that's kind of what you figure a national championship team should be.
Yeah, and you think that could potentially be the best move for Texas this offseason, maybe, you think? Or
I think a lot of it's going to depend on it.
Jeff, let's say you're CDC right now, right?
Right, okay.
And you will have 12 angry, probably old white men knocking at your door being like, hey, we're boosters. You need to fix this. What are you doing? Who are you calling? And
yeah,
I was going to say you have like basically unlimited funds. But that's not really realistic. But at the same time, like Texas, you know what I mean?
You got
and like another thing I want to talk about, I think we've actually talked about this on the show, but Texas getting good at football again puts pressure on all the other sports, like immense pressure. And not only does it do that, because everyone knows that Texas being back to where it should be with their football program, because everyone knows that was kind of sped up by NIL and the transfer portal, how far away are we from seeing like some of the coaches for the other sports being like, hey, we need more money or we need a bigger cut of the NIL distribution. Football's getting too much.
Yeah. I think you've seen.
But sorry, let's say you're CDC and you're told to fix this. What are you doing?
Well, hang on, because I want to address what you just said. I think you've already seen that with volleyball when you add somebody like Maddie Skinner. Women's basketball, we've seen it with, they've added Shaylee Gonzalez, Taylor Jones. Some of those girls were portal entries. So, yeah, you're for sure. You're seeing it in some of the other sports. Softball, when Mike White got the job, his first couple softball teams were big time portal teams. It's kind of leveled out now. And softball's a little bit different than some of the other sports, but yeah, no, it's you're seeing it in the other sports. And again, like I talked about with, I think you were already on for Texas to be having these issues at a time when A&M's got the number one team in the country and a legit chance to go win a national championship. And you're about to go into the league with them. That doesn't help. So if I'm CDC, I think you look at the way CDC's handled the last couple of searches, Jordan, like you look at, he's gone big game hunting for the most part. Like look, for football, they tried the Urban Meyer thing, right? And it didn't work out, but they ended up with Sark. And I'm very happy with the hire and the direction the football program's going. I think anybody would be happy with the direction football's going. The time he had a basketball search, it was a one-man search. It was Chris Beard, and that was it. That was CDC's guy, and he hired him, and we all know how that turned out. I would compare the women's basketball hire, kind of women's basketball, softball track with Edric Floreal. He kind of went out and under the radar, went out and got the best coach he could find. Like when I was floored when Vic Schaefer got the Texas job, because I didn't think he would leave Mississippi State. His family just finished building that house on the lake. Like they got plenty of support in Starkville. There was really no reason for him to leave Mississippi State, but the pull to come back to Texas and try to win a championship, really resurrect that program. And not that Karen Aston did that a terrible job, but yeah, that, I think that CDC's shown he can go big game hunting and land something. I think it would depend on – it's totally different, man, because with baseball, it's – I feel like with the way the major league system is currently set up, you still need to have some attachment to the high school coaches in Texas and some of the travel teams in Texas. But you got to have somebody that really understands roster management and understand. I think for a coach, roster management's got to be the most important thing you do. I don't even think it's player development. I think it's, hey, I've got to allocate X number of scholarships and really treating the portal like a waiver wire. I think that's what the next coach has to have.
Yeah. So in college football, we're seeing this. I mean, it's pretty new within the last year or two, and it's the general manager title. Yeah. Obviously, in baseball, the general manager is, you know, effectively the head coach. But do you see Texas or college baseball, or if it hasn't already, pivoting to like having those type of roles? Because football is the first to do it, but like eventually, every basketball program, every major sports program is going to have someone who oversees the program like Brandon Harris is doing for football.
That's what Chris Ogden does for men's basketball. It's his title. He's the general manager. Yeah.
Okay. But for baseball, do you think, cause I mean, I like, this is just the way I look at it, seeing everyone on socials, everyone in our comments and just hearing you talk about it. It seems like the writing is on the wall that David Pierce is probably going to.
It's not looking good. I mean, I've got to separate. I've got to separate personal from business. Mm-hmm. I like David Pierce. I understand that there's some people that don't, but David Pierce has been nothing but good to me since I've been covering this baseball program. So I've got nothing personal at all against David Pierce. I really don't. But mm-hmm. you know, he put on himself last night. Like he knows what the deal is. He's not dumb. Like when I sat down with him before the season started to write some preview stuff. I mean, he told me, he's like, you know, guys, he's like, players around here talk about pressure. He's like, you want to talk about pressure? He's like, I got to come to this stadium and I got to walk by pictures and statues of Bib Falk, Billy Dish, Coach Gus, and Augie Garrido every day. And you get reminded, hey, in the last 100 years, you're only the fifth full-time coach this program has had. It's a hell of a lot of pressure. And, you know, it's kind of like, Texas baseball is not all that different from what I was talking about with Kentucky basketball, you know? Like I compared it to, you know, Scott Drew. Like if Schloss wins a national championship at A&M, dude, they might rename the stadium after him. Like he would have a lifetime contract. If David Pierce won a national championship at Texas, it'd be like, all right, cool, what's next? It's kind of like the Scott Drew Baylor Kentucky thing. Like Scott Drew can retire and, you know, he's basically king of Waco until he leaves this mortal world. If he won a national championship in Kentucky, he'd be like, cool, go do it. Go do it again. So
yeah,
you got to have somebody. And I applaud David Pierce for taking the job because, man, there were a lot of really damn good baseball coaches that turned it down for one reason or another. You know, and some of those discussions didn't even get beyond like the preliminary level of just kind of putting feelers out, whether it was Brian O'Connor, Kevin O'Sullivan, John Savage, Pat Casey, Tim Corbin, and it ended up with Pierce. And so, yeah, go ahead, Jordan.
You know, you said it was turned down by a lot of people. How much of it, like how many of those people that turned it down do you think it was because of money? Like, do you think maybe Texas, not that they're trying to lowball people, but like, because, you know, obviously money isn't a problem, but almost like, hey, we offer all these other things that coaching at any other program won't give you.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
I think
you got to remember where the baseball program was at the time and where the athletic department was at the time. Mm-hmm. The baseball program didn't have the facility they have now with the Brown Family Development Center, which is the Clemens Pitching Lab. Like it's top notch. Mm-hmm. Somebody tried to argue with me earlier this season about facilities. Oh, we need a pitching lab. I'm like, the Clemens family paid for the pitching lab. It's one of the best freaking pitching labs in the country. Like, and no, I don't think you'd be, you'd be splitting hairs to compare someone that has better facilities than Texas does right now in terms of player development stuff. But they didn't have that at the time. And Mike Perrin was an interim athletic director. So it wasn't like a slam dunk type thing. And plus, dude, who the hell would want to follow Augie Garrido? Like, it was already a daunting enough task for Augie to follow Coach Gus. And now you're going to follow Gus and Augie. You won't be the third guy. You really want to deal with that? So I applaud for David Pierce. Like, he knew what he was getting into, so I applaud him for that. But I do feel like you'd be able to maybe attract a higher profile candidate. I think people understand that with CDC, he's going to be there a while. You know he's going to raise money for facilities. Basically, the vibe I get from CDC, and Chip can probably speak to this better than I can, CDC is the type of athletic director, he's not going to meddle in the day-to-day. He's basically going to tell you, hey, tell me what you need and I'll go get it. But understand, if I get you everything you need and the return on investment isn't great, ask Tom Herman what happens when that happens.
I mean, am I blanking on names? But like, is CDC not the second best athletic director like in school history behind the Lost Dodds? You know what I mean? Because didn't it go like Dodds, interim, Steve Patterson, CDC, right?
Yeah.
Because I was going to say like CDC is easily the best AD since the Lost Dodds, but like that doesn't mean shit. You know what I mean?
Compared him to Steve Patterson, that's a pretty freaking...
Yeah, in the interim,
low bar.
Yeah, exactly. In the interim doesn't count either.
And then it was Coach Royal before it was the loss.
Yeah, exactly. So he's pretty easy number two, right?
Yeah, because the athletic director it used to be you just make the football coach would be the AD, right? It's only been really in the last, I don't know, probably 30 years, 40 years that you've had like ADs that weren't the head football coach. So yeah, it's just a different deal now.
Yeah, no, they're doing that high school shit where it's like, yeah, we're gonna give you this title, yet we know you're not actually gonna do anything with it.
Yeah, pretty much. That's now those guys look for the work.
there's some high schools in Texas where they actually have someone who's like the designated athletic director, and like that's their only job. And it's always fun because like you'll pull up to a practice. And most of the time, coach is like, all right, man, I got to run, like, whenever you're done or whatever at the school. And it's funny. There's some coaches that are just like, yo, I don't have shit the rest of the day. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what? And they're like,
man.
And I remember one of them I asked, I'm like, you're not the AD? And he's like, no. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, that's what's up. Like, so what, you got to, like, teach history or something? And he's like, no, I just coach football. I was like, hell yeah. Like I've gotten lunch with like a high school head coach before.
Yeah. Yeah. What blew me
like away during the school day.
Yeah. No, for real. What blew me away was I went to the first time I went to Carthage.
Yeah, man. Nobody can even go to even goes to Carthage anymore. Unless your name starts with Gabe and ends with Brooks. You're not Yeah, you're not getting in the doors at Carthage.
That's honestly how I got in. I had Gabe vouch for me with Coach Surratt, but it was when Texas was recruiting Kendall Thompson back in the day. And I go chop it up with Coach Surratt, and then the defensive coordinator wants to show me some film. And Coach Surratt's like, hey, I got to run. I got a meeting. But, Coach Morgan, my defensive coordinator, you know, he'll watch film with you. And I was like, Coach, don't you have class? He's like, no. He's like, I just hang on the football office. I was like, you telling me like your coordinators don't teach? He's like, no, we don't teach. I'm like, dude, what the hell? Like, that blew me away. Like, the coordinators don't even teach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no, you just find some. Tell me if this is still the case. Because I remember the first time I ran across this was with our guy RJ Bond when he was at Skyline. The recruiting coordinator usually has – he's usually going to be like the ISS teacher. Like, he's going to have some BS job where it's like, you maybe needed, like, part of the day.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't ask these guys a ton what they actually are doing outside of coaching. But yeah, no, I have seen
– That's what fascinates me, Jordan.
Yeah, I have seen coordinators and stuff too, though, that don't even have teaching roles. But man, I like Travis, when I was there, Hank Carter was the AD, and he actually was pretty involved with the other sports. Like, I don't think he really falls under the category of the other guys who were just getting the AD title. But man, I like Travis. Like, every single coach that's on the football staff outside of like two, it makes up who coaches PE. Yeah. And the two guys who don't, like, one of them does health, which is a semester course only. Yeah. And then one of them did like geometry and math. He's actually still there. He was my D-line coach when I was there, Coach Hoffman.
Oh, nice.
But
yeah, Hank Carter's not the AD anymore, though, right? He doesn't have the AD title.
Unless they took it away from him. Because
I thought they hired like an actual athletic director.
They might have. I didn't notice that. I mean, Lake Travis is opening a second high school in the next 5 years. They're going to need a superintendent. That's my thought, yeah. So, yeah, and I guess, you know, it is probably time we should get into some football.
Coach Carter is still according to the Lake Travis website, he's still
the athletic director. I was going to say, because I didn't think I'd seen that. But, I mean, yeah, that's how he's the highest paid coach. Or I think he is. He was at some point. Todd Dodge is probably raking it in. I love Joy.
Man, I remember the Statesman did a story this was like 2006, 2007, where they looked at high school football coaches' salaries. There were like maybe a half dozen to 10 coaches in the state who made over $100,000 a year. It was like Jack Welch at Coppers Cove, Sam Harrell at Ennis. Like, there was very, very, very few coaches that made $100,000 a year. Dude, tell me a big time, you know, 5A, 6A, hell, some 4As that aren't making $100,000 a year now.
Yeah. No, I know Hank was the highest paid coach at like 156 or 152 or something like that. And like, Todd Dodge was the number two, and his salary was only like 500 less per year or something like that. And I'm like, this is like the most petty bullshit of all time. But yeah, so Jamon Tapp. Yeah,
hey, real quick, Paxton, that's not like breaking news. Sark said that at the beginning of spring ball about Jadae Barron might be the guy that gets the headset. They were kicking it around still. And I think they might still be kicking it around. I don't know if it'll be Jadae, because if Jadae plays corner, if I'm PK, I don't necessarily want a corner being the guy passing along signals. So,
yeah,
my guess is it'll probably end up being Anthony Hill. My dark horse to wear the communication device, my dark horse for that is Drew Makuba, just because he's an older guy. He's going to be either at safety or nickel. He's not going to play corner, so he'll be kind of in the middle of the field, traffic cop type guy. So, yeah, he's my dark horse, but I think it's going to end up being Anthony Hill.
Another guy who could be a dark horse would David Benda. You know, it's kind of same thing. Yeah. He's been around forever, and, you know, we know they trust him. So,
yeah, for sure.
But for me, I think I know I spent like 10 minutes sometime this spring being like, it's going to be Anthony Hill. I still think it'll be Ant. And I mostly just think that just because he's going to have a higher snap count than anyone else on defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like you can just take the mic out or go put Ant's helmet on Jadae. So, like, you're going to want it being a guy who's on the field more than anyone else. And Ant just makes the most sense for me.
Speaking of snap counts, we want to get to we haven't touched on the portal news for today yet with a new.
Yeah. Go ahead. I saw a tweet that said, like, of Texas's four entries so far, they've lost zero starts, and I think it was like seven or nine total game appearances.
Yeah, and I think most of those were the seven games Jamon Tapp played. Peyton Kirkland didn't play at all. Samaje Burrell didn't play at all. Billy Walton played in two.
Yeah, he played in the Wyoming Baylor game. And I only know that because I wrote his whole story.
Seven games. You know, what's funny is pulling pictures of these guys for the most part, like game photos, it's all like Wyoming and Baylor. Pretty much. Some of them, like Jamon Tapp, I think was from Houston. But no, Jamon Tapp's in the portal. He only got 98 snaps. And I know, I think Paxton or maybe Rex, somebody said in the chat that they were surprised. There is from Paxton that they were surprised Tapp left. I'm not. And it's got very little to do with how good of a player Jamon Tapp may or may not be. He just couldn't get on the field last year. He was playing behind Burke and Sorrell. As a matter of fact, I mentioned it in the story. That's up at Hornets 24/7 right now. By the way, my apologies for not mentioning it earlier. Today's our last day at Hornets 24/7 to take advantage of our 60% off VIP sale, our transfer portal special. So get over to the site and check it out right now. A year at Hornets 24/7, 60% off the normal price. But I was looking at snap counts, Jordan, from last year, and I'll actually credit Chip for making it click in my brain to go check snap counts. Jamon Tapp only played 98 snaps last year. Here's the guys that were ahead of him. Baron Sorrell with 587, Ethan Burt 434, Justice Finkley 284, Jet Bush 273. Bush is gone, but you bring in Colin Simmons, you bring in Trey Moore. Finkley's back, he's still there. Colton Vossett coming off the back injury. You've got Zeno Omazula out as a true freshman, and I don't know how much Zeno's going to play, but that freaking edge room is incredibly crowded. And yeah. Even with, you know, year over year turnover, and I don't fault Jamon Tapp for, because he's got some game film. I don't fault him for, hey, maybe he really likes it there and just wanted to see kind of where he was at during the spring, realizes where he's at now. And it's like, all right, if I want to play, I got to go somewhere else. So I liked him too as a prospect, just because it had been a minute since I'd seen Texas recruit kind of twitchy guys like that on the edge. And it kind of gave you an idea of the kind of guys PK was looking for. But, I mean, it just kind of shows you, you know, Jordan, one thing that I don't think people took into account with players having freedom of movement was coaches kind of have freedom of roster selection too. And I'm not saying this happened to Tapp, but, man, if you're not cutting the mustard, dude, they will, in no uncertain terms, let it be known that your best opportunity to see the field might not be in their program. So, freedom of movement, I love it for the players, but it cuts both ways, man.
Oh, yeah. Man, where is this video? I need this video so bad.
By the way, can we now say that who the recruit was, that we are the unnamed recruit that we always talk about, that when we talk about recruits going to schools to recruit for other schools, can we now?
Yeah.
He's in the portal. Can we say it now?
Yeah, so that's what I'm getting to, but I'm trying to find this video of his that's like my favorite.
Yeah, just so while Jordan's looking for that video, we drop hints all the time. Jamon Tapp got sent home from a visit to LSU because he was recruiting for Texas.
Well, it was during the LSU spring game. Whatever year this was, it probably would have been
spring of 21.
Yeah, because he was class of 22. And not only was he kicked out of.
Go ahead. We just might as well lay it all out there now.
he got kicked out of the LSU spring game for trying to recruit people to Texas, but also because he was fighting other recruits in the visitor section. And apparently was forcibly removed from the stadium, according to multiple different people I talked to.
You ever been forcibly removed from anywhere, Jordan?
No. Especially not when I have a visitor's badge on, but hey, we've always loved ourselves some Jamon Tapp. Here it is. I found it. This is what I'm talking about.
Live. Texas is the place. That's where you want to be. If you won't be at Texas, then you won't be living. And that's facts.
I love this video because it starts by him and Larry Turner Gooden just like awkwardly standing there.
Yeah.
Texas is live. Texas is the place. That's where you won't be. If you won't be at Texas, then you won't be living. And that's facts.
Man. Also, fun fact about Jamon Tapp. Gonna miss his gold grills too. And I remember there's this photo of him coming on Bevo Boulevard where he's like that. I think that was versus the Bama home game last year. But no, another fun fact about Jamon Tapp's recruitment. Committed to Texas while in a club. So, yeah. Or silently committed.
Yeah.
So
he's going to be one of those guys, Jamon Tapp.
Oh, another fun thing about his recruitment. Since he was a Louisiana kid, he got like 5 crystal balls as soon as LSU offered him or whatnot. But I remember After, and this is like Nick and Mike who told me this story, because they were who were on the site when it was happening with him, or when Jamon Tapp was going through his recruiting process. But apparently also after all these LSU crystal balls went in, he went on Twitter and it's like, I don't know what a crystal ball is, but Austin, Texas is a place.
Yeah, I remember that.
So, yeah. Gonna miss Tap, man. Like I love the vibes. And it was funny. It's not a, I can't tell the story on this show just because that all the details, but also because I don't remember the full story. It wasn't mine, it was told to me. But Nick Harris has a really funny story from when he went and saw Jamon Tapp play in Donaldsonville, Louisiana, because that's where he's from, the Bayou. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not that, like, there's a, you know, we don't talk about people from Louisiana that much. There's a difference of people from the Bayou and people from Louisiana. Jamon Tapp is from the Bayou.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm gonna miss him. Brought great vibes, and I always loved him. So yeah, but yeah, that's Jamon Tapp, the living legend.
Yeah, I was trying to find I thought I had it bookmarked somewhere, but I don't. Jamon Tapp is gonna go down as right along with a guy like Rufus Harris from back in the day. Jordan, I don't know. You don't have any idea who Rufus Harris is. As a matter of fact, I think Rufus Harris got to Texas before you were born. But Rufus Harris once had a quote. He was talking about, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it in front of me, but he was famous for saying, you know, I don't have anything nice to say about the Sooners, but I just plan on leaving them in misery. He said, and I won't say anything about the Aggies because they couldn't read it anyway. Or maybe it was the other way around, but it's something like that. Yes, Rex, Rufus Harris played DB. He said that DB stood for destructive back. That's the position he played.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm tweeting out this Jamon Tapp video.
You guys, do we want to pull up? Yeah, Jordan, if you could pull up Jake's quote here. I don't want to discuss that, but I'll just let it marinate. No pun intended. This Jake,
I'm not gonna lie, I don't even know that. I don't even know what he's referencing. I wasn't super into recruiting then. If you just want me to Wikipedia it, I can do that.
Man, how can I say this? Yeah, don't put it on the screen for everybody. But allegedly, there was a coach on Tom Herman's staff who went to visit a very, very prominent offensive line recruit in the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm. As one does.
And allegedly had to go pot and had to fire off a mud missile, pinch off a mud snake, and allegedly clogged the family toilet.
How does that story even like get out?
Said recruit committed elsewhere like the next day or the day after. I think a family member that was present in the house let that out.
Yeah.
It's alleged. I was not there. I don't have proof.
Look, Tom Herman's a bad guy, but if you're choosing where you're going to school based off who's clogging your toilets.
if it's a close battle, man, the little things matter.
Man, I can
look, Matt, man. If somebody comes in my house and I don't have a prize,
what Ed Orgeron would do? Like, if he came and home visited my kids, man, getting recruited, be like, "Oh, you're going to the bathroom? Yeah, go in that bathroom, and you're going number one."
Like, you gotta treat your bathroom when you have guests over. You gotta treat your bathroom like my brother treats his bathroom. My brother Joe, whenever I go over to his house. if I'm like, I get up from the table, like, where are you going? I was like, I gotta go to the bathroom. He's like, you better be going number one. He's like, what? I can't poop in your house. Like, no, you can't. I'm like, well, all right, I'll remember that. So, yeah, man, it was, I've just heard of coaches doing wild stuff, like coaches that, you know, you don't know a family's preference, so you got to keep everything above board. You can't walk in just like with a spit cup, with a spittoon, and put a dip in. Like, you don't know. Wait and do that afterward. It'll be, that's the kind of stuff, Jordan, you can do in the field house when you're BSing with the coaches.
Yeah.
Cause I'm sure you don't need to name names, but I'm sure there were many a coaches at Lake Travis that on the practice field or in the weight room had the snuff can and had a dip in while y'all were doing whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Shit. The middle school coaches, dog.
you gotta have coaches, like, the way you can thank the apparel companies, cause coaches have like better shorts and dry fit shirts and whatnot. But the old school, my like ideal old school offensive line coach's uniform, you got to get like the bike, like almost, they're almost like baseball pants, shorts, that they're like kind of that polyester material that like hugs the skin, cotton polo shirt with unbuttons, so your taco meat's hanging out, trucker hat and a skull can in the back pocket. That is like the ultimate offensive line coach's uniform.
Yeah, no. I'm trying to think of my craziest recruiting story or whatnot.
By the way, you go to way more high schools than I do now. I might go to like one or two a year. You go to one or two a day now. When you go to practice fields, man, is anybody using the 7-man sled anymore? I've had multiple coaches tell me they don't use it anymore. It's kind of like nobody uses the 7-man sled anymore.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think probably some schools got it. To be honest with you, like, if I'm at a school for an offensive line recruit, like, I always just kind of think, like, this is always the way I think about it, too. Like, if I'm going to a high school game to see an O lineman, I'm not posting shit. You want to watch him take three steps, you know what I mean? So, usually when I'm at a high school for, like, an O line target, then I'm not paying a ton of attention. I'll mostly just try to shoot the shit with the coaches or something.
I've had. Coach Carter has told me they don't use a 7-man sled. Drew Sanders of Vandegrift has told me they have one, but it just kind of sits off to the side. Coach Dodge has told me when he was at Westlake, they don't use a 7-man sled. Nobody uses a damn 7-man sled anymore. And I feel like we would be in a better place as a society
if in
high school football we brought back the 7-man sled, because nothing builds camaraderie and teamwork and teaches you perseverance like pushing that damn 7-man sled up and down the field. So, high school coaches, if you catch wind of this, make the 7-man sled great again. That's going to be my mission for football. There's one place where I guarantee you they got a 7-man sled. I could almost guarantee you in Liberty Hill, Texas, they're on that damn 7-man sled. Backs, receivers, everybody's on that damn 7-man sled.
Yeah, I pray Liberty Hill never produces an actual recruitable athlete. or at least one that would get recruited by Texas, because like I might kill myself having to go out of my way to go see Liberty Hill play football.
As fast as that area is growing, you know, one day you're gonna be at the All America Combine check-in,
and I'm gonna be like, God damn it, he's 6 foot
lineman from Liberty Hill rolled in there. He's like 6'5", 285 pounds, a rising junior,
36 inch arms, and I'm just like, you motherfucker. But I'm craziest recruiting stories. I don't know. Like, I've actually, the only one I talk about is the Micah Hudson Ohio State visit, because I mean, that's public. But I've been on a bunch of different visits with different kids, but like, I'm not gonna go screw myself there. I've been with recruits when they're on the phone with people from schools, and like, I've heard like high profile position coaches like on the phone be like, hey, like whatever that school is going to give you, you need to tell us because we will do more. Yeah. Like things like that. But I mean, that's not really crazy. That's kind of normal. Taylor hammed it yet.
Two old school Ross Luxinger, who's one of my mentors back in Inside Texas when I was there back in the day. told me two good Mike Stoops recruiting stories. You want to hear them?
Yeah.
Not can Mark, you, Bob, Mike Stoops.
Yeah. Give me one second now. So Javian Martin, I just want to talk about him real quick because I'm actually who found him.
Pflugerville High?
Yeah, Pflugerville High. Well,
all right.
For now. I got the ear to the streets. Come on now. But this
kid's gonna be a Weiss next fall, isn't he?
Whoa, relax. But Javian Martin, 2026 tight end at Pflugerville. I believe he's 6'4". Not sure what he lists himself at, but power five tight end prospect in my eyes. His only offer is UNT. I sent his stuff to a bunch of different staffs. And
has he been to see UNT?
I don't think so. Okay. But they offered him. But I sent him to a bunch of different colleges, like his stuff. And a lot of schools are interested in him. But he didn't have any verifieds until he got an Under Armour Houston invite. And he was pretty good there. Just the thing with him, he's really athletic, and he has a basketball background. He started for Pflugerville in basketball this year as a sophomore. He also had like 600 or 800 receiving yards as a tight end as a sophomore in Pflugerville, who most people know, you know, plays 6A. And then this here's the thing why I don't think he has more offers. He needs to lose weight. Like he's really good where he's at right now, but like it's clear he's got some baby fat on him where if he was to cut down, like he would be a monster, like a serious monster.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to him about that. He's working on cutting it. But yeah, I really like him. Texas has had him on campus a bunch. To be honest, I really don't like whenever they do that with local kids. Like, I think from Texas' point of view, it's like, hey, the kid knows, you know, we like him. We're still recruiting him, not ready to offer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just keeping him warm. But, like, recruits and kids and their families take it as, like, why aren't they offering? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So could he be a guy Texas eventually offers? Yes, I think he has the potential to potentially one day play at Texas. Right now, is he a guy worthy of an offer? I wouldn't think so. I'd like to see some more stuff from him. I think that's why a lot of schools haven't offered yet. But, yeah, pretty much it for Javian Martin.
Been a minute since Pflugerville High had a recruitable prospect like that.
Yeah, the last one that went Power 5 that I can think of is actually in the portal right now, Sydney Mbanasor, who's also a Jews kid like Mr. Martin. And,
Sydney Mbanasor, he was Pflugerville High?
Yeah, was he not Pflugerville High?
I thought he was Hendrickson.
Let me double check. Well, he's in the portal right now. I know that.
Maybe I'm thinking about Nelson and PJ because they were both Hendrickson kids.
Let's see. Yeah, went to Pflugerville High School.
Okay, nice.
So, he was listed as a receiver. His ass is a tight end.
Storm Woods might have been the last notable guy from Pflugerville High, unless I'm just
Storm Woods is still in Austin. He trains a lot of the running backs in Austin.
Oh, like does he really?
Yeah, pretty much every. Outside of Quentin Joyner, he's worked with like pretty much every running back I think that's come through Austin like the last 5 years. I know he had Seth Alexander, and he's got DJ Dugar right now.
Unless I'm just totally misremembering, I want to say that Pflugerville team in 07 that played Katy for the state championship, that was a loaded team. That was Alex Okafor, Xavier Gooden. I want to say it was Greg Nwoko on that team. I think Storm Woods was on that team too. That was like the last really talented. Pflugerville had a bunch of years where they would have multiple D1 prospects. Eric Hardeman was one of those guys. Man, I talk about Eric Hardeman, dude. Two of the most talented dudes I ever saw in Austin area. One was Eric Hardeman, both Pflugerville guys. One was Eric Hardeman. The other was Reggie Madu, who was a safety at Pflugerville. Was just, you could tell when he was a sophomore. Like, you, Jordan, you know when you see sophomores and you're like, yeah, that dude's going to be a top 100 type kid in the country. Reggie Madu was one of those type of kids, but got in trouble and never panned out.
Yeah, so before we bring the boys in here, I want you to finish your Mike Stoops.
Oh, yeah, so just real quick. So, yeah.
And this one, a double check. Sorry for showing my age / ass here. Stoops is Bob and Mark's dad, right? Or Mike Stoops is Bob and Mark's father, correct?
Brother.
Or brother. Got it.
So
was he the one who was receivers coach or some shit for Bob? most of the time, right?
Or no, Mike was the defensive coordinator for Bob.
Okay.
And for Lincoln Riley, who got fired after the Texas game in 18.
And is he just retired now?
Or? Well, Mike actually almost got hired at Texas when Sark got the job, and then ended up not it didn't pan out. And then he ended up, I want to say, was he the DC at maybe Florida Atlantic, I think, at the DC job at FAU? Because they were Mike Stoops, and Mike Stoops was an analyst at Bama when Sark was the OC. That's how they got connected.
So now Mike Stoops is Tom Herman's DC.
No, I think this was pre.
Got it.
This was pre Herman.
Got it. Well, sorry for cutting you off. Go ahead and tell us about.
So when Mr. Mike Stoops was the head coach at Arizona, two incidents that I was told about from Ross Luxinger. One was Texas was recruiting a kid out of Houston named Russell Carter. Russell Carter was a DN, played at Texas a little bit, wasn't a huge player at Texas, was a good prospect. At the high school, Mike Stoops is in a meeting with Russell Carter and Oscar Giles, and I want to say there was another, so Oscar Giles and another assistant were coming in, and the high school coach is like, Coach Stoops, I got Texas coaches coming in. Like, that's all right, I'll just wait here. Mike Stoops allegedly hid in a locker while the Texas coaches were in there talking to Russell Carter, and it was just really awkward, like, didn't know, like, it was kind of weird. And so at some point, the high school coach called Oscar Giles and was like, hey, yeah, you might want to come back because Coach Stoops was hanging out in a locker in the office while you were in here. That was allegedly what I heard. The other one was Texas was recruiting Jermichael Finley. Jermichael Finley and Javorski Lane were cousins and were thinking about going to the same school together. The only school really that they had in common, because there was like a 1 week period, if I remember right, where Javorski Lane was like half-ass considering Texas, but not really. The only school they had in common where they wanted to go was Arizona. So the Texas coaches were going to come over for an in-home. Mike Stoops was there. This was a night, I think, I don't know if this is the same night or different nights. The Texas coaches come in. Mike Stoops hides behind the couch. Wants to stay in the house for his in-home. Hides behind the couch. And at some point, like, allegedly, what I was told was Jermichael Finley like sneaks out of his bedroom window, because at that point he's just over the whole recruiting thing, like doesn't want to deal with it anymore. So like I think Jermichael wanted to go to Texas, Javorski wanted to go to A&M. They both kind of agreed that if they went to the same school, it was going to be Arizona, but they ended up staying in state. And Jermichael went to Texas, Javorski went to A&M. But yeah, Mike Stoops tried to hide behind a couch to sabotage Texas coaches in home. That's what I heard.
You want to hear a funny story that was actually confirmed about in-home visits from just a couple months ago? So I assume most people who saw the show saw how Nebraska, not that they necessarily pulled a rab out of their ass because it was a buildup for a long time, but Nebraska ended up with Dylan Raiola, the number one ranked quarterback in the 2024 class. And, you know, most people know it, but Dylan's father played offensive line at Nebraska before going on to the Lions in the NFL. His dad's numbers retired at Nebraska.
Yeah, Dominic Raiola played at Nebraska when that meant something.
Yeah. And then his brother, Dylan's uncle, is currently the offensive line coach at Nebraska. And his uncle, who I believe is Donovan Raiola is his name. It was the only coach retained by Matt Rhule from the old Scott Frost staff. And it was because of his ties to the number one quarterback in the country, right? That's his nephew. Mm-hmm. So whenever Nebraska flips Raiola from Georgia because I didn't think he straight up flipped. I think he just decommitted at first. I might be getting that wrong. But it was about a week, week and a half, 2 weeks before signing day when home visits are going on. Mm-hmm. What's also around signing day? The holidays.
Christmas, yeah.
So guess who went home to go live with his or spend time with his brother's family during the holidays? Donovan Raiola. Yeah. And he stayed at their house for 3 weeks. It didn't count as a home visit because he has blood relations to them. And no one else was able to home visit.
It's good stuff, man.
Apparently, schools kept pulling up, and they'd see his truck, and he'd be like, fuck, he's still here on the home visit.
Yeah, that's the only thing
they've heard. They finessed the whole system, so no other schools could. I mean, Nebraska kind of had it no matter what.
Yeah.
But they purposely did that so no one else could make any last-minute runs.
BK Bucky's told me this story. The only thing like that was the night before Leonard Davis signed with Texas back in the day, Randy Rogers was the recruiting coordinator. And him and Bucky were together at Illinois and then with John McAvick at Texas. And Leonard's telling Randy Rogers, he's like, I don't, you know, A&M's calling me and I just want to be done. And Randy's like, well, I'll tell you how you do that. He goes, what? He goes, take the phone, take it off the receiver, and just stick it in the dresser drawer. So that's what Leonard did. Took the phone off the receiver, stuck it in the dresser drawer. No phone call, signed with Texas the next day.
Thank God for that. That is awesome.
That's, recruits do that nowadays too.
Yeah. Like, hey, if I've got to go fight a bunch of Nebraska offensive linemen, I might take Leonard Davis with me. If I've got to go into the mouth of hell to fight the devil, I'll probably take Leonard Davis with me. But you know who else I'm taking with me, BK? I'm going to take Tom McKay with me. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's a fight we're winning if Tom's with us. There's no doubt about that.
If you want to know one thing about Tom McKay, Tom, the one thing I can unequivocally say about you, you get shit done.
I try.
Yeah.
You doing all right, Tom?
Some light.
Doing good. How are you guys doing? Wonderful. I'm always amazed that there's so many recruiting stories for football and there's almost zero for any other sport.
You know, I'll be 1,000% honest, and BK can back me up on this. Basketball has just been so seedy. The seedy underbelly of college basketball recruiting has just been an unsavory cesspool that I've tried to avoid for as long as possible. And if I've got to dip my toe in it, it's in and out as fast as possible. Because I tell people with basketball specifically, Tom, like, hey, do you want to know how school X got such and such a recruit? I'm like, I don't want to know. I'm going to use my imagination. I don't want to know. Well, no, I can know. I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
I think it's funny that everybody acts like it's such a horrendous thing when they do something. I was at SMU. Well, already kicked out before the hassle started, but running a beer joint right there off the campus. So I got to get, you know all the football players because you got to hand them money. And it was funny is all the Texas guys who would come up to party on the weekends.
Yeah.
And that was back in the days of, McMichaels?
Steve McMichael?
Steve.
Yeah.
He was a Texas defenseman.
Yeah.
Yeah. He used to come up party in the beer joint all the time with the SMU offensive lineman.
How the hell did you have enough beer for Steve McMichael? I imagine it probably ran out most nights when he was up there.
No, I ran the Knox Street Ice House, dude. We had stacks along the way. It was good. It was fun. That was the good old days, though, back before the when they did that death penalty thing. I absolutely died laughing. I thought that was the most ridiculous. Well, every single school's come in here doing the same. They were getting money from everybody everywhere. Every guy. Yeah,
everybody was doing it.
And they still are.
But but no. NIL, NCAA, they're on top of it. Come on now.
Oh, yeah.
They've legitimized about one-third of it. There we go.
Tom, that's where everybody learned the term. The SMU scandal taught everybody the term selective enforcement.
There you go.
No, Texas was running the Southwest Conference tidy, innocent, doing clean. It the right way.
Yeah, my school is innocent. Hell. Your schools are cheating. That's how it
is. It is funny. It is funny because I'm kind of transparency here. I don't have an amazing relationship with my stepfather. We don't talk a ton. The few times we talk, usually it's about Texas football because we don't have a ton in common. Last year, I was just filling him in on what all is going on in recruiting nowadays, more so the stuff we don't really talk about on the show because we can't. And he literally was just like, no, that's wrong. Texas doesn't do that. And I was just like, dude, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is only what I do to make a living. Like. Yeah.
Hey,
none of the major league baseball teams were cheating like the Astros were either. None of them.
This Jake Bayless comment in the chat. How come SMU got slammed for sanctions, but nobody ever uncovered that? Nobody bothered to investigate that. It's a mystery that remains.
I don't remember him killing five hookers at campus, and I was there.
You would have known.
Craig James, he was even an ass when he was at SMU, though.
Hey, real quick, before I go, my since you brought him up, Tom, my favorite Steve McMichael story, and I was on a radio interview with him.
He had a weird nickname. What was his nickname?
He had two, Mongo and Bam Bam.
Mongo, that's what used to come in all the time. Yep.
He when he was at Freer High School in South Texas, down in the valley, there was a rattlesnake on the football field. And instead of having somebody get a gun or a rake or whatever, Steve McMichael walks off the practice field, takes his helmet off, kills the rattlesnake with his helmet, and then goes back to practice.
I can see that.
God. Yeah. Good. We need more guys like him on the team.
Steve McMichael played at Texas when grown-ass men played at Texas. Kenny Sims. Yeah. Johnny Johnson. There was that was back BK when Texas had no problems winning games like 10-3.
Yeah. Now we just have problems winning games. Although last year, notwithstanding.
Last year was fine. Last year was fine. We're baseball, good. On the other hand.
Hey. Leave him alone. Yeah.
But I mean, that one thing I do really enjoy about like Texas actually being good is like this program is actually fun to watch. Like the Sark offense is fun. Like I would 1000% take I don't know, the Tom Herman years, the Charlie Strong years over being like a current active Iowa fan just because having to watch their games every week. No, can't do it. So
yeah, I would have switched teams, and I am as loyal as it comes when it comes to sports, but I couldn't do Iowa football for that long under Kirk Ferentz. There's no way.
Well, BK, we had, you remember we had the Rodney and I had the interview with one of the Iowa radio guys, does a show in Des Moines, and we were talking to him, and I'm like, I said there's some poor sap that had the unfortunate duty, like they were obligated to watch Iowa and Rutgers. I'm like, you're that guy.
Yeah.
Your job required you to watch Iowa and Rutgers, and I'm sorry that you had the equivalent of bleach poured in your eyes for 3 hours.
I'd rather be a janitor than have to cover Iowa football, honestly. Like, whatever the worst job you could think of, like, I'd rather do that than have to cover Iowa football the way y'all cover Texas.
Cleaning out like the rattlesnake pit at the snake farm.
Sure, I'll do it.
I don't get how Iowa like gets receivers like recruited. I don't get like committed.
I don't get how they get like, an offense. Like why does anybody on offense want to go?
Have they ever scored over 15 points in the last 8 years?
In a season or in a game? I'm not sure.
If they probably had a pick six and a kick return if they did.
Well, guys, I'll let you, BK, and Tom get on with the midday program. Looking forward to Tom's HSOs on his hot sports opinions on Tom Herman and some old stories and definitely some NHL picks. So, Tom, I said my Stanley Cup Finals was the Hartford Whalers and the Quebec Nordiques. You think I'm that far off?
A little bit.
You're 1991 called and wants their Stanley Cup predictions back. All right, you guys take care. We'll be back to do it tomorrow.
Have a great one.
For sure. Yeah, this is the last thing I'm going to say. NHL, the only player I can think of, I'm not even sure if he's in the league, but is Alex Ovechkin still in the league?
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I don't know why you said unfortunately, but that's the only name I can think of.
He needs to go away so that the Capitals have a chance at something so Wags can actually brag about something.
Yeah, well, the only reason I know about him is because my aunt, my dad's sister's family, they all live in D.C., and I got a cousin who plays hockey. He's playing somewhere in college, I'm pretty sure, but he actually went to the same, like, prep academy. It's called Gonzaga that Caleb Williams went to. That's supposed to be, like, the number one sports school or something in D.C. So, and they always talk about hockey in the Capitals. That's how I know Ovechkin, so... But
he's trying to catch Wayne Gretzky as the top goal scorer of all time.
How far away is he? Like 1,000?
He's very close, unfortunately.
Yeah. Damn.
If he can make it another year or two, he might catch him.
Damn.
So we're hoping. Well, personally, I don't even care. I'm hoping he just gets hurt or gets retired. Either
way. Damn right. Hey, I fuck with this guy, dude. I'm a fan of praying on some downfalls.
I mean, you can't. You can't actually take away the records of the great one. His name is the great one.
Yeah.
Ovechkin, go away. Your name is the Mad Russian. Go away.
Shoot. Yeah. All right, well, Jordan.
I'll get out of here. Y'all have a good one. I'll see y'all tomorrow.
You too, man.